Good evening, Seth. Welcome to the Space Show.
It's a pleasure to be here.
What is SETI?
Well, SETI is just an acronym for the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. And this is just the effort to try and find cosmic company by eavesdropping on their radio broadcasts, for instance.
Some of the search has been done from Australia, hasn't it?
It has. In fact, the project that I'm involved with, which is known as Project Phoenix, began in February 1995, at the Parkes Radio Observatory there in lovely New South Wales. So, indeed, we began in Australia. Any experiment that's trying to find something that could be anywhere in the cosmos has got to pay attention to the Southern Hemisphere, after all, and that means using a Southern Hemisphere radio telescope in our case, and the biggest one in the world is right here in Australia.
And what did you find?
Well, we haven't found anything so far. That's really the bottom line of our experiment. This is, and I call it an experiment, it's really sort of an adventure and discovery more than anything else. We haven't found the aliens yet. In fact, if we had found the aliens, I probably wouldn't be on this radio broadcast with you this afternoon. I suppose I'd be on the beach enjoying a drink. We haven't yet found the aliens. But, of course, that answer may change in the next 2 weeks or the next 2 years, or maybe it'll take longer.
Okay. After Australia, you packed up all your equipment and took it away. Where did you go to?
Well, where we went to next was Green Bank, West Virginia. This is kind of philosophically satisfying because the first modern SETI experiment was done by Frank Drake in 1960 at that observatory. That's a national facility in the United States, much in the way that Parkes is a national facility here in Australia. And we were using the 140-foot telescope there that's somewhat smaller than Parkes, which is 210 feet. And now we've moved to the Arecibo radio telescope, well-known to many because of its appearance in such movies as Contact and GoldenEye. 1,000 feet, that's 305 meters in diameter, the world's largest radio telescope. And we use that instrument now twice a year, in March and September of every year, trying to hunt down the cosmic critters that we're looking for.
As we speak, it's April, and you must have just finished the search. No luck?
Indeed. I was sitting in the tropics throughout most of March at the observatory, and the aliens have remained coy at March. But mind you, I mean, this is one of those experiments where you have to have a great deal of patience. There's no guarantee that it's going to pay off while you're still young, or even, for that matter, while you're still alive.
What do you reckon the chances are of finding a signal?
Well, we don't know what the chances are. Nobody knows that. It depends on factors that are very hard to estimate. Not only what fraction of planets, for example, out there have cooked up life, but also what fraction of them have cooked up intelligent life. And when you say intelligence, of course, all that means is that they're clever enough to build a radio transmitter. Now, we don't know that. And beyond that, not only do they have to get on the air with their broadcasts, but they have to stay on the air long enough to afford us a reasonable chance of picking them up. So nobody knows what those chances are, but I would say this, we haven't found them yet, and that might sound like a discouraging news given that this was first tried in 1960, but the experiment keeps getting better. About every 10 years, the experiment gets maybe 20 times better, just the march of technology. So in the foreseeable future, this experiment's going to be hundreds of times better, and that leads us on, as it were. That's sort of like playing the pokies, but the odds keep getting better.
You must have plans to continue the search into the future, and your funding is rather shaky, isn't it?
Well, the funding is all private. Unlike the SETI experiment being run here in Australia, which is funded via a university, we don't have any taxpayer dollars. We did up until 1993. The experiment I'm working on was a NASA program up until then, and then the U.S. Congress killed that funding. So ever since then, it's been run on private dollars. And, of course, if the private donations dry up, then we all have to go out and get another kind of job. So, yes, indeed, the funding is somewhat shaky, but we're optimistic that we'll be able to continue to find the money to not only do what we're doing, but also to build far better experiments for the near-term future.
And what are those research experiments?
Well, what we hope to do in the near future, the first thing we hope to do is, of course, to get our own telescope. It's very nice to go to the tropics, to go to Arecibo a couple of times a year and use that telescope. And it's a very large telescope, too, so that makes it very sensitive, of course. But what you really need to do this is your own telescope, one that you can run 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in the search for extraterrestrial signals. And today, it may be possible to build something like that for far less money than would be required to build something of a conventional sort, the kind of thing that you see in Puerto Rico and in parks. You can use backyard satellite dishes, which, of course, are a commodity item, and you can buy them relatively inexpensively, particularly if you buy a lot of them, like 10,000 of them. You buy them for a few $100 each. You array them across some local real estate, connect them up electronically, and you have a very large instrument for very little money, relatively. We hope to do this in the next 5-10 years and have an instrument that would be 100 times better than anything that we could afford to find out there in the radio astronomical community.
You, of course, have to be well away from radio interference, like from cities and so on, don't you?
Yes, all radio telescopes are located, indeed, in fairly remote locales. I mean, Parkes is lovely, for example, but it's not downtown Sydney, and it isn't to keep the astronomers from being distracted. That isn't really the reason it's out there in the sheep country. It's because there's very little interference from human activities, as it were. And the same is true of all radio observatories. They tend to be located in remote areas.
Are radio telescopes the only means you'd have of detecting extraterrestrial life or intelligent life?
It's not the only way, actually. I mean, it's just one way. We think it's perhaps one of the better ways, if not the best way, but we could be wrong about that. One other possibility, and it's being looked at now, literally and figuratively, is to use... to do optical SETI. Instead of listening for radio waves, we look for very bright, very short flashes of light, perhaps infrared light, that the aliens might be beaming our way just to get our attention. It turns out this is not very hard for them to do, and it's not very hard for us to pick them up. In fact, an amateur telescope fitted with a little bit of electronics might be enough to pick up a high-powered laser that the aliens may be aiming our way. So we're beginning to look for that sort of thing. And the other thing you could conceivably do is just look for artifacts. In other words, look for physical evidence of the aliens. A lot of people in America think that there's plenty of such physical evidence sort of lying around in their backyards. I don't personally believe that. But, you know, you could look out into space and see if you see any evidence of large-scale astro-engineering projects, things that very advanced civilizations may have built. We've never seen anything that we think is alien engineering, but that's an approach.
By that, you mean on our planets, in our solar system, or further afield?
Well, I would assume that they're further afield. Now, mind you, it depends on your point of view on these things. There are people who think that the aliens are not only out there, but they're here perhaps mining our asteroid belt or perhaps abducting my sister for experiments my mom wouldn't approve of. That's possible. I don't see too much evidence of them being here on Earth, and frankly, not in the solar system either. But, you know, that's a personal point of view.
So you give no credence or little credence to the stories of UFOs?
No, well, the people certainly see things. I get about a phone call a week from somebody who's having trouble with aliens in their personal lives. And I have to say, none of these phone calls are the result of... Well, they don't strike me as being due to pranksterism or anything like that. These people aren't trying to pull the wool over my eyes. They're very sincere. But I've never heard them say anything that encouraged me to think that the aliens were actually visiting our planet. Mind you, if they were, I would find that great news. That would be job security for me, after all. So I would encourage that if I thought it were true. But I, and I must say, my point of view here, I think, is shared by most scientists, certainly most astronomers, is that the aliens are not visiting the Earth.
Why do you think people make up these stories?
Well, I don't think that they really make them up. Some people do, but in general, I don't think that they're made up. What happens is they see something in the sky, and they don't know what it is. And sometimes it's quite hard to know what it is. I mean, you know, if aircraft lights are a very common thing you might see, or balloons, and Canadian geese. There's a whole laundry list of things that people see and mistake for alien craft. And the fact that they mistake them for alien craft is, I think, largely due to the fact that when they don't know what they are, they jump to the conclusion that they're alien craft because that is the interpretation du jour. You know, in the old days, they might have mistaken them for angels and said they'd seen angels. Today, it's aliens. They certainly see things in the sky. But the connection between those things in the sky and alien intelligence is very tenuous, in my opinion.
There must be a deep-seated human need or want to want to know that there's life out there.
I think that there is that. We always like the idea of some other beings more powerful than we are that might interfere in our lives, for better or worse. In the old days, of course, religion would supply that. Today, some people are skeptical about traditional religious beliefs, so maybe they're turning to the aliens to supplant that need. I don't know. There's undoubtedly some good psychological reason for this, but a lot of it is simply due to the fact that since the Second World War, of course, we've been able to build rockets. Okay, I mean, we talked about it beforehand, but since the war, we've actually done it. And in the popular imagination, now we can go to the stars. Well, we can't go to the stars. We can go to some nearby planets, but that's already a start. And we assume if we can do that, then they can also do it. So they make this leap that since we've been to the moon, the aliens could come here. And so I think a lot of it has to do with that simple fact.
What do you think would be the impact on first yourself and your fellow scientists and then society at large on the discovery of real, verifiable signals from aliens?
Well, clearly, if we were to pick up a signal, for example, this September when we're sitting there in the Puerto Rico, that would be a big news story. There's no doubt about that. I think it would dominate the papers and the talk shows for quite some time, a few weeks. But then what? Well, what happens after you pick up the signal is that you probably can get the money to build a much larger radio telescope and go back and look for the message, if there is any, because the kind of instruments we're using today won't be very good at picking up messages. Now, if you can pick up the message, which presumably is just a whole bunch of bits coming your way, then you have the hope of understanding it. Perhaps the aliens are doing us a favor. They're trying to get us to join the Galactic Club, or maybe they just want to educate us, or who knows. If that were the case, then suddenly you're in touch, albeit one-way touch, with a civilization that will undoubtedly be far in advance of us. They're not going to be at our level. They're going to be way ahead of us. And then maybe they'll teach you some very interesting things. I mean, that you could short-circuit, as it were, maybe 100,000 years of human history, leap into the future. That clearly would have some impact on your day-to-day life. I mean, no doubt about that. I think it's much more likely that if you do get the bits, you're not going to understand them. They weren't really intended for you. You just sort of happen to eavesdrop on an alien modem, as it were, and you're just not going to understand what it means. But even so, I think that that's really going to profoundly affect us in the same way that Copernicus affected us, even though, it didn't affect your day-to-day life very much. It was important to know how we fit into the universe.
What might aliens be like if we ever did find them?
Well, the popular perception of what the aliens are going to be like is that they'll be, kind of soft and squishy and maybe green with a couple of eyeballs and looking fairly much like us. That makes for a great movie alien, because you can relate to them, whether for good or bad. But the real aliens may not be anything like that. Clearly, biology can be very diverse. Their biology may or may not be the same as ours. There are good reasons to think that, in large measure, their biology will bear resemblance to ours. It'll be probably carbon-based life forms, as they like to say on Star Trek, because carbon likes to make very complicated molecules, and complicated molecules are necessary for life. But just a trip to the local zoo here will convince you that even critters that share DNA with us and a planet and an environment don't look much like us. So it's bizarre to think that the aliens would look anything like us. The other possibility, and I consider this a real possibility, is that the aliens we encounter on the radio may not be biological at all. They may be the construction of biological civilizations that lived quite some time ago that have produced thinking machines that could have spread out through the galaxy. And we pick up a signal, and it's in fact from a machine intelligence, not from a biological intelligence.
Like some films out at the moment speculating that life on Earth might be taken over by artificial intelligence.
Well, there's several books out on that idea, and it's maybe not such a crazy idea. I mean, people who work in the field of what's called artificial intelligence, perhaps a misnomer, but they've been predicting for the last 20 years that they're going to build a machine that can think. And they've always said that they'll do it within 20 years. Clearly, they're too optimistic, but maybe someday they really will do it. And if you have a thinking machine, the first thing you would ask it to do is help it design something better than it is, and then you get a smarter machine. Pretty soon you have a very smart machine. And very smart machines, I don't know whether they'd be inimical to us. You'd probably have them running the government there in Canberra. I don't know. But some of them might just get up and leave, because this is not where the action is in the universe. I know Australia is a great place and all, but really the action in the universe is closer to the galactic center, or giant molecular cloud, some other place. This is not downtown in the universe. So it could be that the machines will have spread out.
Now, Seth, you've written a book outlining some of these ideas, haven't you?
I have. It's called Sharing the Universe, Perspectives on Extraterrestrial Life, and it's published here in Australia by Lansdowne Publishing, which is in the Rocks in Sydney there, so you can find it in the local bookstores. And it kind of speculates on many of the things we've been talking about. What might the aliens be like? Where might they be hanging out? How could we find them? And suppose we do, what happens then?
What sort of audience are you aiming this book at?
Well, this audience is intended for, Wayne from Penrith, perhaps. It's called a trade book, so it's not for specialists. It's intended for anybody who's interested in the subject.
So it's an easy read then.
Well, I hope so. That's what people tell me. As I say, it's not intended for specialists. It's intended to be informative and mildly amusing. So I hope it's at least one or the other.
And if people want to get hold of it, how do they do that?
I think that probably the simplest thing to do, I know that it's available via online bookstores, at least in the United States, presumably here as well. But the best thing to do is just go down to your local book dealer and slam your fist down on the counter and ask for the book, Sharing the Universe.
Well, thank you very much for joining us tonight on The Space Show.
It's been a real pleasure, Andrew.